Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to The Tonight Show. A new Taoiseach and new cabinet faces. Simon Harris becomes the youngest ever head of government after the Dáil backs his nomination by 88 votes to 69.
I will be a Taoiseach who will listen. And my message is simple. I want to work every day to improve the lives of all in this country.
The Taoiseach announced his cabinet reshuffle this evening. Peter Burke and Patrick O'Donovan are appointed ministers, while Helen McEntee remains in her justice role. Also on the programme, the Taoiseach tells the Dáil that Ireland will formally recognise the state of Palestine.
We've discussed this between the government parties, and it is my intention to bring to government a formal proposal on recognition when these wider international discussions are complete. But be in no doubt, recognition of a Palestinian state will happen.
And the family of Dylan Quirk, who died unexpectedly during a hurling match, has set up a charity in his honour. Former Ireland international and chair of the foundation, Niall Quinn, joins us to talk about why screening is so important. Simon Harris has been confirmed as the new Taoiseach, his nomination backed by the Dáil earlier today with the support of 88 TDs. At 37, the Wicklow TD enters the record books as the country's youngest ever leader and follows Leo Varadkar's resignation on Monday. This was the moment when the Ceann Comhairle announced the results of the vote.
Deputy Simon Harris for appointment by the President to be Taoiseach. Result, Thaw 88, Neil 69.
I confirm, therefore,
from there it was straight to Áras an Uachtaráin to receive his seal of office. The incoming Taoiseach was then quickly whisked back to government buildings to sign off on his cabinet. Simon Harris and his team of ministers returned to the Áras to receive their seals of office and hold their first meeting, as is the tradition. Let's go live now to our news correspondent, Richard Chambers, who is at Áras an Uachtaráin tonight. The new cabinet meeting has just finished up, Richard. What can you tell us about Simon Harris's new ministerial team?
Well, in many ways, Claire, this was the reshuffle that wasn't. It's been dubbed by some people inside government buildings as a wee shuffle or a sub shuffle. Two new appointments to the cabinet, as you've been discussing. Peter Burke, the Westmeath TD, moves into the enterprise role vacated by Simon Coveney. He's seen by many people in Fine Gael as a solid performer in the media as well as at Oireachtas committees. He is the first Mullingar man to serve in cabinet. Patrick O'Donovan also gets the call up to the cabinet. Table. He will serve in Simon Harris's old role of higher education. But in terms of the big news of the day, it's probably who wasn't moved out of cabinet, and that is Helen McEntee, who will retain her portfolio at Justice after weeks and weeks of speculation and scrutiny dating back even as far as last year and issues around safety in Dublin and the Dublin riots aftermath. So she retains her position, as does Heather Humphreys, the new deputy leader of Fine Gael. Pascal Donoghue will stay on as well in the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform. Jennifer Carol McNeill, not appointed to senior cabinet as many had expected. She will be moving to the new trumped up, effectively, Minister for European Affairs junior ministry. She will not sit at cabinet, but she has been assured, we understand, that the new role will have added responsibilities, will be quite a prominent and a significant role in this new government shake-up.
Now, the first cabinet meeting has just wrapped up there, Richard. What's been on the agenda?
Well, in truth, Claire, not a huge amount has been actually on the agenda today. It was more of a ceremonial get-together in the state dining room. As you say, it's traditionally where the first cabinet meeting of the new Taoiseach will takes place, sitting around the dining table, the cabinet table, which had been used in Leinster House for cabinet meetings up until 1960. So there will be a full cabinet meeting tomorrow, though, we understand. This evening, they effectively went through the discussing their point of view in terms of what the priorities are for government, appointing the super junior ministers, as well as Jennifer Carroll McNeill to her position as well. So really it was an issue of focusing minds and getting their eyes forward on the role, as well as all of the ceremonial and protocol issues of gathering here today, receiving the seals of office and posing for, of course, the family photo. Really it was a proud moment for Simon Harris over the course of the day, as he came here twice with his family, his grandmother actually accompanying him. She was whisked to the front of the family queue by Sabina Higgins, the President's wife, to make sure that she had the best view for the signing of the warrant of appointment and for Simon Harris receiving his seal of office. So a lot of coming and going here at Áras an Uachtaráin for the day. The ministerial cars are actually queuing up here now to take the various ministers back home after a very long day of politics, both here at Áras an Uachtaráin and around government buildings in Leinster House.
Richard at Áras an Uachtaráin, thank you for joining us with that update. We can go live now to Leinster House and to our political correspondent, Gavin Riley. And Gavin, talk us through the new cabinet appointments. What's the thinking behind them? Peter Burke and Patrick O'Donovan, both promoted in this regard, but others left behind.
Well, people might like to think that it's always a meritocracy and that the most capable people might get the best jobs. But in this case, there are two G's, gender and geography. Fine Gael, when you include the position of the chief whip, Hildegard Nocton, has seven seats at the cabinet table. Now, three of those seven are occupied by women. And if you look at the geographical spread that's achieved by today's two appointments, then Fine Gael will at least contend that they have every corner of the country covered. The departure of Simon Coveney meant that there will be no Fine Gael representative from Munster at the cabinet table. Patrick O'Donovan from Limerick County now fills that void. Hildegard Nocton remaining at the cabinet table representing Galway West as the chief whip and now responsibilities for disability and inclusion also means that she has some representation for Fine Gael on the west coast of the country. Throw in Heather Humphreys, who of course remains in the border counties from Monaghan, and Peter Burke, who as you heard mentioned by Richard there from the Mullingar region. It means that Fine Gael can now say they have cabinet representation from Munster, from the west coast in Connacht, from the border counties and from the Midlands. And on top of that, of course, Pascal Donoghue in Dublin Central in the north inner city, and Helen McEntee in Meath East, and Simon Harris himself in Wicklow. They will contend that it's as much about geography and making sure that they have every area covered coming up to a general election.
Now, there had been speculation about what might happen, Helen McEntee in her justice role. But in the end, Simon Harris making a very safe decision there to keep her on.
Yes, there was one practical element to that, which was that Simon Harris himself was responsible for stewarding the somewhat contentious legislation against incitement to hatred through the Dáil's Justice Committee when he himself was an interim justice minister around 12 months ago. So removing Helen McEntee and repudiating some of that agenda would have effectively been conceding himself that some of that agenda now needed to be dropped. Ultimately, though, it came to a case of pragmatism, that if Simon Harris did want to try and have as little cautious and as little tumult in this reshuffle as possible, then it made sense to leave everyone as is. There was also an argument that only 4 months ago the government spent a lot of political capital defending the position of Helen McEntee after the riots in central Dublin, so it might have been seen that it might have been something of a concession to the opposition parties who wanted rid of her 4 months ago if they were to decide to remove her from that job now.
Now, Simon Harris giving his maiden speech as Taoiseach today, in that he made promises to improve the lives of all in this country and saying he'll be a Taoiseach for all.
Yes, that's right. And it was quite notable that Simon Harris took some of the themes from his Ardèche speech at the University of Galway last Saturday evening into today's announcements, trying to really shake off the idea of Fine Gael being institutionally jaded after 13 years in cabinet, and once again pointed to the idea of his choice of ministers presenting a new energy to a party looking for a fourth term.
Whilst I am proudly the leader of Fine Gael, I will lead a coalition of three parties. And today, I sincerely promise to be a Taoiseach for all. No matter your political persuasion, I will work with you and for the country that I know we all love. I will be a Taoiseach who will listen, and my message is simple. I want to work every day to improve the lives of all in this country. Fueled by hope and driven by a vision of a better Ireland, I will provide a new leadership and a new energy, and I intend to act decisively in the best interests of our people.
Now, it won't surprise anyone to learn that opposition parties don't quite believe that the government is capable of any of that. Mary Lou McDonald's taking the charge to the government that after 13 years, it's simply not possible for them to suddenly display new energy now.
Today, for the third time in 4 years, you present your choice for Taoiseach. For the third time, you rearrange the cabinet deck chairs. For the third time in 4 years, you pat each other on the back and tell the people what a great job you're doing. It's your century-old cosy club circling the wagons once again to cling to power at all costs.
Now, the composition of the government remains, of course, unfinished this evening. There are now a few vacant junior ministries as a result of the promotions today. They will be filled at another formal cabinet meeting at the more traditional home of government buildings tomorrow. One small subplot to all of that is that the appointment of Patrick O'Donovan to the formal cabinet role now means that there's a vacancy going as a junior minister responsible for Gaeltacht matters. It's understood that the four contenders among the Fine Gael backbenches, those are the likes of Colin Burke, Emer Higgins, Alan Farrell, Alan Dinnell, none of them have a conversational level of Irish. We may again yet have a situation where the minister responsible for the Irish language affairs isn't able themselves to conduct an interview in that language.
All right, Gavin Riley at Leinster House, thank you for joining us tonight with that analysis. And joining me now to discuss today's events are Fianna Fáil TD and European candidate for Midlands North West, Barry Cowan, Sinn Féin TD and finance spokesperson Piers Doherty, People Before Profit TD Breed Smith, and Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News with the Irish Independent. We asked Fine Gael for a TD to appear on this panel tonight, but none was made available to us. I'm going to start with you, Barry Cowan. We heard from Simon Harris in his first speech as Taoiseach, promises to improve the lives of all in this country, new leadership, bringing new energy. Very short space of time to do that. How do you think this government will change under Simon Harris?
Well, it remains to be seen. You know, the agenda for the government doesn't change. The programme for government remains as was when Leo Varadkar was Taoiseach, and there's a commitment on the part of the three parties to the programme for government. I know Simon Harris will obviously try to set out a stall for himself as leader of Fine Gael in the context of it being adjudicated in various elections on the basis of its performance in government and its ability to put forward a set of policies that it hoped would resonate, as would any other party and as will any other party in the context of the local and European elections and in the context of a general election this time next year. But for the moment, you know, it's life goes on for this government. Okay. It has to...
So nothing new. What I'm asking is, we're hearing about a new era, a focus on a change, on a new energy.
Well, obviously...
Is this all just political spin?
Well, obviously he'll bring all his own particular style to the role as Taoiseach.
Rather than policy change.
But ultimately he's the leader of government. Ultimately, he has a duty to ensure that the programme for government is adhered to, and issues that arise during the course of that government's tenure, whether it be in relation to small, medium enterprise and business and the difficulties they're having presently, whether it's in relation to the difficulties associated with farming by virtue of the weather constraints in relation to their normal practices this time of the year. There are issues, of course, that any government would have to deal with as circumstances arise. And he has made a commitment, as have other parties to government, to keep the same commitments.
Ticking along. Like, do you agree with the opposition that actually not a lot, in fact, is going to change?
Well, what I don't agree with the opposition is, and I recognise the what's contained within the constitution, Bunreacht na hÉireann, and Mary Lou McDonald, you know, was crying for an election. She looked for an election after the last election. But ultimately, the job, each TD is elected for 5 years. The job of the Dáil is to elect people to office, to elect a government, to elect those to offices. There's provision within the programme for government for a change of leadership will be catered for by the other parties. No different than if Michelle O'Neill had to vacate her position in the North, I would expect other parties to recognise that and allow Sinn Féin make a nomination if it were necessary. It's no different in that regard. Leo Varadkar has said he's no longer committed to the role. He's moved away from that role. Fine Gael has appointed somebody to act as leader, to act as Taoiseach and as leader of government. And their job is to ensure that government does what it set out to do in the programme for government and deals with other issues as they arise, as is the case. And as he relayed today, and we would also add our voice too.
All right. OK, it's a change. It's a practical change that had to happen. Piers Doherty, there is a programme for government and this Taoiseach is determined to see that through.
Yeah, well, look, in a probably unique moment, I agree with Barry. There is no change here at all. This is same old, same old. This is, you know, Simon Harris has been, it's not new. He's been sitting at the cabinet table for 8 years. There's collective responsibility there. He has his fingerprints all over all of the crisis that we have, whether it's the fact that in three of our hospitals around the state today, there were 70 plus people on trolleys, couldn't get a bed, admitted to hospital. The fact that children are going to sleep, 4,000 of them in emergency accommodation. This is the cabinet that he had served in. This is the results of the decisions that he and his party, including Barry's party, have taken in government. So there isn't any change here. And the trick, that Fine Gael are trying to use that today is that somehow they're suggesting that they're going to achieve in 10 months what the government wasn't able to achieve in 13 years. Mm. But we've heard, you know, and you said it, you showed it in the clip there in terms of promises from Simon Harris. We've heard of Simon Harris's promises before. The public know of Simon Harris's promise. They know of the promise that he gave the parents of children with scoliosis, that their children wouldn't be waiting more than 4 months. He broke that promise over and over again. He committed, he made promises in relation to the National Children's Hospital. He was the Minister for Health that where the costs ballooned. He said there would be accountability. Barry and his colleagues were lining up on the Dáil saying they would have no confidence in this minister.
Do you see this as a negative move? Would you prefer to have Leo still at the helm?
Listen, it doesn't matter who's driving the bus when the bus is going in the wrong direction. That is the problem. This is not a good day for the country because what the country needed was real change. And what we needed was an opportunity for people to decide who should lead the next government because we don't need a change in terms of the deck chairs in government. What we needed changes in policy on housing, on health, on cost of living, on issues like childcare. They're the issues that need to be addressed.
When you hear, and Barry has said it about this programme for government and all TDs being elected and this programme for government in 5 years and we'll see it through, to give them the opportunity perhaps to do that and all those promises you're talking about, if they wish to say, look, we've done our best in trying to resolve the issues, that they should be given perhaps the opportunity to do that, what would you say to that?
Look, let's call a spade a spade. This is about three political parties that are holding on for dear life to political power. They know their time is up. They don't have the guts to go to the electorate and seek a mandate. The last time Fianna Fáil tried to hold on to power after a reshuffle was in 2010. Leo Varadkar stood up in the Dáil that time and challenged the Taoiseach at that time to seek a mandate for 5 years. Fianna Fáil didn't have the guts to do it that time. The government collapsed shortly afterwards after I took them to court and the High Court found them guilty of breaching the constitutional rights of people in Donegal. And similarly, this government doesn't have the guts to go to the public. Otherwise, and Barry can shake his head, otherwise, believe in what you're saying. Go to the people and let the people cast judgment. Who do they want to lead to the next government?
Look, I said it earlier. You know the Constitution, I expect you to, the same as I do, Bunrock na hÉireann. It provides for each member of the Dáil a 5-year term.
It actually doesn't, Barry. Can I just correct that?
Excuse me. And the government was formed, was agreed, was nominated, was accepted. Majority Dáil, that's parliamentary democracy. That's the way it works.
Yeah, and a commitment is made
to govern for five years.
Did anyone expect three Taoiseach in 4 years and what we are seeing now?
But irrespective of whether you could have five Taoiseachs in 5 years, that is the provision is made within our constitution for that to be the case.
Do you think that's
for the
right?
Dáil, if they so wish, can elect
them. Do you think that's right and correct that we should see a change of leadership
when you make an agreement, you honour it. When you commit to a deal, you stick by it. We gave a commitment to all party leaders.
And then in the context of this programme for government,
if at any point a leader vacates that position, we'd allow for somebody else to take over. As I said, if Michelle O'Neill stepped aside in the North for any particular reason, I would hope and expect other parties would allow to make a nomination.
Can I just say this here? As Barry tried to lecture me that I should know the Constitution, and I took your party to court because you breached the democratic rights of people in my constituency. The Constitution doesn't say a 5-year term.
It provides for office holders.
It provides for a 7-year term, no more than seven years. Article 16.5. And what we're in here is uncharted waters. Three Taoiseach in, 16 months? It is absolutely ridiculous. And you can't answer the charge. If you believe in what you're saying on housing and health and cost of living, allow the people to have the say, but you're running scared of
them. No, I'm not.
I want to bring the rest of my panel in. Breed Smith, and just to say, Breed, you're actually also running for a seat in the European Parliament as an MEP for Dublin, to state that as well. But to come to you, like we had the ushering in of a new Taoiseach, but a departing Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, said, you know, we may have had our problems, but we are free, we are prosperous, and we are safe, listed off. Or a number of achievements. There's something Simon Harris has promised to, you know, continue on with this list of achievements with the time that he says he has in office. Do you believe him in any capacity?
Well, first of all, when other deputies talk about parliamentary democracy, I find a lot of parliamentary hypocrisy in this whole process. For example, Fianna Fáil completely backed to a man and a woman today, Simon Harris. And it's not that long ago when they were pushing a vote of no confidence in him when he was Minister for Health. So they can flip-flop in this manner. And I find the whole thing very, very hypocritical. And I also think that the projection from Simon Harris and from Leo Varadkar that they're a government for all and they'll do everything for all is nonsense. We're a very class-divided country. And we see that in the evidence of the homelessness, of the queues of people who are on waiting lists in local authorities, and the inability of our young people to be able to afford to buy their own home. Don't get us going on the hospitals and the special needs. And the whole public sector is an absolute bits because of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael legacy over the last 11, 12, 13 years. And not admitting that means they can't go forward. If you were a child, if your child was bold and did something and keep saying, no, I didn't, no, I did it, you'd make sure they admit it so that they can change and that their habits become better. So these guys are not taking any responsibility for all of the crises.
Can I ask you, Breed, when he listed off on his departing speech today the list of achievements he felt this government had achieved to date, and then he said, look, there are problems. He didn't name those problems, did he?
No, he didn't.
And outline specifically.
No, he didn't. And there are a cohort in this country who are doing very well, thank you very much. They are earning well. They are looked after well. Their profits are gone through the roof. But there's a lot of people being left behind and they don't talk about them. And we've no evidence that they will be able to deal with that other than the great pronouncements that I'm going to be a Taoiseach for all. And he keeps talking about our people. Our people, his people are not the same, if you like, as my people. He doesn't deal with the problems that ordinary, everyday people face in all of the crises. There's no point in keep listing them off, but they are there and they're in the public sector and they are causing a huge amount of distress and exodus from this country of young people. They are a real problem and they will not face up to it.
Kevin, do you think that was a relatable speech from Simon Harris? We obviously echoes of what he said at his Ordesh at the weekend, at Fine Gael's Ordesh at the weekend as well.
Yeah, I think this is part of the change of political dynamic. And Barry talked about style a bit, but Simon Harris, his policies over the years, his track record there are very easy for Pearce to pick apart, as he has done. Where he shines, if you like, is his communications. And this government at times has had communication problems, take around immigration, for example. So it's one of his better strengths is that he is able to talk to people. We saw that during COVID. To some extent, we saw that during the cervical check crisis. So that is one of the things that perhaps the opposition parties will be a little bit threatened about as he goes forward, even if, as Pearce says, they're not that overly threatened by his ability to deliver on policy.
Let's talk about his initial moves and his first big decisions as Taoiseach. On the ministerial appointments, how safe was Simon?
Very safe, boringly safe, if you like. If this was supposed to be a new broom, it looks quite the same. I don't think the public are going to get overly excited about it. But, you know, we've been debating here this idea of three Taoiseach in such a short period of time. But we're not in head of lettuce territory here at all, which is what some people are trying to do is compared to the chaos you've had in Britain in the last few years. What I saw today was actually a remarkably stable government for all the challenges that it faces and all the problems that the country has. Three parties seemed incredibly stable. And the fact that this transition happened without anybody going overboard or getting wobbly is quite remarkable. So he stayed with that.
A sizable majority for him in terms of the votes and the backing he got to become Taoiseach.
To get 88.
Did he have a lot of work with independents to get them on side, or isn't they always going to roll in?
Well, he met them one by one. And I suppose at this stage, the independents have almost divided themselves into those who I think someone like the government parties feel they can reasonably talk to and those that are probably not worth talking to at all. And he picked them off one by one and got them on side. They may not stay there, but it's useful for him to know that he has them as we head into local and European elections where people like Barry might end up leaving the Dáil in the months ahead.
Barry, the decision by Simon Harris to keep Helen McEntee in her justice role, it's been dubbed a very safe decision. She's come under pressure on the job, not least from within your own party, the likes of William.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theatres May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In the Fianna Fáil ranks. Would a change in that portfolio, a fresh pair of eyes, have been welcome?
Look, again, you know, the role of Simon Harris is to appoint Fine Gael ministers to the positions that they have. So he'd only six,
I'm
only six
about
to play
Helen McEntee
with.
Now.
Helen McEntee retained the confidence of the Dáil only 4 months ago. I don't see any reason in the meantime why she should have no confidence or not have the confidence of the newly appointed
Taoiseach. And the
Taoiseach.
Confidence of
she retains the confidence of the Fianna Fáil party. She retains the confidence of the government as a whole. That stability that Kevin refers to is something that has to be respected and appreciated. It has delivered record levels of jobs, low levels of unemployment, record levels of receipts and record levels of exports.
That could be to the regret of government.
Sorry?
If law and order continues to come under pressure in the remaining tenure of this government, is that a decision that the Taoiseach could come to regret?
It remains a key focus of government, of all parties in government. The responsibility remains that with Helen McEntee to implement the provisions that are made within the programme for government to increase the level of Gardaí, to increase sentencing, to deal with new options to allow Gardaí to be retained and to allow new Gardaí different options to getting into the force
in order to improve the levels and the commitments necessary there.
And the funding has been provided to ensure that is the case.
Pierce, to bring you in on that, and what we've been hearing is it would be seen perhaps as a win for Sinn Féin if Simon Harris were to make that move and move Minister McEntee out of her current role. What would you say to that?
Look,
would you agree?
I wouldn't put Sinn Féin up or down, to tell you the God's honest truth. We don't have confidence in Helen McEntee, and we've numerous reasons why we can outline that in terms of Garda numbers. We've less now than we've had before of Garda stations, the morale within the Garda. There's many other issues in terms of how the justice part of the immigration issue in terms of those that have been refused access to stay here, to remain here, still haven't been deported in some cases. So there's many reasons, but it's not Helen McEntee. As I said, it doesn't matter who's driving the bus. If the bus is going in the wrong direction, it's going in the wrong direction.
So it wouldn't matter what
changes were made. The thing here is they're all wedded to the same policy. There is no change of policy. You talk about Simon Harris, and Simon Harris is good at communication skills, as Kevin said, but Leo Varadkar, that's the exact same thing that was being said about Leo Varadkar. Nobody is interested in communication. What people that are watching this programme want to know is, are their child going to get the hospital appointment? Will their granny, who's lying in a hospital tonight and probably maybe overnight, will she get a bed in the morning? Will somebody who's got special needs be able to get that assessment so that they can actually thrive in their educational setting? They're the bread and butter things. Nobody gives a damn how Simon Harris communicates, whether he communicates online or to the media or in the Dáil. They want delivery. And nothing that Simon Harris said today, not one policy idea in terms of health, not one policy idea in terms of housing. And that's the problem. They're out of ideas. And that's the problem here. This government is bound by one thing. Hold on to power with all you have, because they are afraid of the electorate.
Before we go to the break, Breach, to bring you in on this disability cabinet subcommittee, another announcement from Simon Harris tonight that's going to be set up. Is that significant at all, do you believe, in terms of his priorities and looking towards the area of disability?
Well, one would hope that at this stage, a government would see that as being a serious concern and would deliver, at the very least, a commitment to sign up to the UN protocol, which they've refused to do up to now. And then to do something about the exodus of psychiatric nurses and therapists because they can't find a place they can afford to live in and start at basics. But I do want to ask Pierce a question. Like you've just said there, Pierce, and I totally agree with you and you outlined it well, that they're devoid of any decent policy, both parties. Will you commit to the Irish people that you won't go into coalition with either of them in the future? Because I think that's really important for people in this country to see that there will be an alternative with a different set of policies, that you won't go into coalition with Barry's party or with Simon Harris's party.
So, Bridge, you know as well as anybody, for the first time, that we can actually have this conversation is that there is a real chance to have a government led without Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. That's the opportunity. That's what I am wedded to. That's what all of my parties wedded to. That's what we work every single day to try and achieve. Why do we want to achieve it? Not just because it's not because we don't like Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. It's nothing personal about that. It's about we know that the maximum amount of change that can be delivered for ordinary people is a government without Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
But the answer this year is
I don't dictate how many people will vote for me or vote for my colleagues.
What's the answer to Breed's question?
So at the end of the day, that is the option that we want to do. And then at the end of the day, we'll sit down and we'll talk to everybody
on the basis of
the change that can be delivered.
I expected that answer, but I don't think it's good enough. I don't think it's good enough. I think people want to hear that there's a real alternative possible.
There is a real alternative.
And by keeping that door open, it's not going to be an alternative.
And every person who votes for Sinn Féin increases the opportunity that we are going to have a government for the first time in 100 years without Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Okay.
And all of the parties in Breach, I think you know that as well. There's a real opportunity here.
I'll have to stop you there. We have to take a break. More when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back. New Taoiseach Simon Harris has promised to hit the ground running, match vision with action and fix housing once and for all. But what can he realistically hope to achieve in the remaining time of this government? We're joined down the line by Stephen Kinsella, Professor of Economics at the University of Limerick. Thanks for joining us on the programme tonight, Stephen. I mean, the focus will probably be on the quick wins, but can he realistically do much?
Oh, a Taoiseach can do a lot. I mean, I think if you think that he has about 300 days in office before he has to call a general election, 350 maybe max, within that he can call a budget. He has maybe 10 or 15 bills he can get through. So yeah, a Taoiseach can do a lot in that time. The question is, what will you do that is substantial enough to be rewarded by the people with a fourth term in office?
All right. Well, one of the things that he has promised, and it's not possible to do it in this current term in office, but that's the delivery of 250,000 houses within the next 5 years. How can he make serious inroads in that in the time that he has? I mean, he's making promises for beyond his time here, potentially.
I think the first thing to do is to note that we actually have the capacity to build that number of houses in the country. I mean, we did it in 2005 and 2006. So just as an empirical matter, like, you know, the 50,000 houses is not beyond the current wealth of the country, the current capacity of the country. And what we lack at the moment is a building capacity, and we can build that in. There is sufficient funds to do that. The question is, can you get it done in the next 300 days? And while it would be doubtful, you can certainly put enough pressure behind key actors to make sure some of it is delivered. And of course, the delivery targets are up and to the right, which is a good thing for everyone.
All right. OK. And Stephen, I mean, you mentioned there that he has time, he's 300 days, and there's a budget factored into that as well. What's going to happen, budget 25, do you believe? I mean, this is an opportunity, obviously, to put money where his mouth is. But is he likely to do that? We heard from Leo Varadkar about that. He said, you know, he was excessively cautious, and that's a regret he had. He said it again in the Dáil after saying it in an interview prior to this, and that if he had a regret, it was that he was too economically cautious. He listened to too many people on that front. Do you think we'll see any change from Simon Harris there?
I hope you do at one level. Although, you know, you're not going to find too many economists saying it's a brilliant idea to spend more than you earn on a continual basis. And I think, you know, it's natural to, in a fiscally prudent place, to want to go for safety, right? But I think looking back on it, you're always haunted by the things you don't do. I think Leo Varadkar was right in saying that the rebound of the Irish economy was not caught by anyone. I mean, everyone was surprised by just how well the economy rebounded after Brexit, after COVID, after the cost of living crisis, and it will continue to do so. So there's optimism there. If you look at the budget, though, the budget is typically constrained by things called the fiscal rules. As lucky generals have it, Simon Harris is very unlikely to be constrained by those fiscal rules. He is also likely to have to deal with the highly inflated budgetary expectations of the Irish people. Budget 2024 spent something like 14 billion euros, and there wasn't much of an appreciable difference in the polling numbers of the ruling parties. So it's unlikely that even spending a tremendous amount of money would be that good. The key, especially if it's homeopathically applied, you know, 5 euros here, 5 euros there, the real question is, are you going to sort of grasp the doorknob and open up the door to a really big singular policy that maybe can be the hallmark of the Harris administration in going into the next general election?
All right. OK, Stephen Kinsella, thank you for that. Just bring our panel back in. Barry, on that one, do you think we're going to see sort of a very different budget this year? Do you think that Simon Harris is going to want to put his stamp on it? People are used to give away budgets, according to Stephen. I mean, will that buy you votes? Is that what
previous,
the hope is?
Previous budgets in this government have been centred around the difficulties associated with the cost of living crisis, with COVID, with Brexit, and adequate compensatory measures and record spending to address those issues, whether it be for business, industry and commerce, for homes, for energy bills and so forth. That pressure has eased, is easing. That's not by accident, that's by design.
So not the same level of spending this year, potentially?
Potentially not, but that remains to be seen, and that debate is only beginning. But, you know, the issue on housing, for example, you've seen record levels of funding, you've seen initiatives that would help to buy, you've seen first home schemes, service development charges waived, affordable and cost rental schemes, planning log jams being addressed.
But it's still not going to actually reach what Simon Harris is promising on the 250,000
and I've seen, you know, and I look
5 years.
Kevin's from Offaly, I can you know, compare this government to the previous one. I think it's important to make this point, to show the progress is made, but not to the level that you would want, and to increase that further.
It came from a base of nothing there.
But you take Eden Derry, Dangan, right. Tullamore, Mucklagh, Ballycumber, Belmont, Banagher, Moneygall and Shinrogh. They've seen houses since the previous government only seen one town, I could say that. So that's real progress to be made in every county.
Right. Now, he left out for Ban, where I actually live, after all.
But there wasn't a scheme done this time around. But, you know, progress is being made, but not as much as we would want. And that's why we want to continue in the vein. That's why we have to recognise that the public finances are vitally important to ensure. If you vote parties to the left and the far left, you're going to mean increases in spending, yes, but increases in personal tax, increases in corporate tax.
All right, can I just,
and that will spook business, industry and commerce, and we're not in a position then to deliver public services.
Interesting that we heard from, you know, Stephen saying it's actually doable to deliver 250,000 homes, which is one of those, as I said, the comments made and promises made by Simon Harris. And if the ambition is there, it can be done. Sinn Féin has also made that promise. So you'd agree with Simon Harris that this is achievable?
Listen, Simon Harris is just catching up to what everybody's been saying for years now.
OK, so you acknowledge that? So
we acknowledge that he said something in a soundbite in a speech. There, he has no policy. The government have no policy. Barry's right. They haven't changed their plans. Their plans are still the old targets. Targets that they're missing. They've missed. This is the fourth year now. You've missed your social.
And improvements have been made. Barry, and if you want to compare your policy, I can do that too.
You.
If you're so
See, this
wish.
Is a tactic from Barry. He just shouts over me.
You know,
because the
do you want to get down to the brass tacks?
Barry, let Pierce
your
finish what he's saying.
Is the Minister for Housing, and for the fourth year in a row, consistently, he has missed his targets on social and affordable housing. And they're based on the abysmally low targets. Everybody knows we need to increase housing in terms of 50,000 at least over the next 5 years. That's without a doubt.
Would you expect or want, you wouldn't want this, a cross-party kind of coalition on how to actually reach the targets, to achieve the targets that are necessary in this country?
It's not just about the targets. It's not just about 250,000 homes.
But it is, isn't it?
No, it's about making sure that those homes are affordable for people, making sure that the rents are affordable for people. And that's the problem. Much of the houses that were delivered
to do that in any sort of a cross-party capacity to actually say this is how you can deliver those homes.
Of course, we gave the government the rent tax credit idea. It was us that put that forward, and they did it, and they made a mess of it in terms of how they're implementing it. We put forward the proposal in terms of mortgage interest relief. So we put forward over and over time and time again the solutions for the housing crisis. They ignore it. They are incapable of dealing with this crisis because they have created the crisis in the first place.
But did you listen to Sinn Féin when it came to the 250,000 homes?
What I'll say about Sinn Féin and their housing policy, 3,600 extra social homes they say they will deliver. They say the cost is 250,000 per unit. The actual cost, according to the department, is 308 million. That's a 209 million gap in the Sinn Féin housing policy. Now, there are other gaps, and you're talking about elections. There's local elections, there'll be European elections. Property tax you will also get rid of, which is 400 billion. Carbon tax is another 600 billion. The gap in your budget, according to the Sunday Business Post some weeks ago, was 200. That's a, there's a 1.5 billion okay. gap. Just, and they've to make up that just to stand
and
still.
That's to
stand still.
That's
to stand still. That's to stand still. So what I'm saying to you is, you know, he can say all that he likes to say, but when you drill down into their policies, they don't add up.
This is a scaremonger.
Have a bit of manners. She's trying to bring me in. Okay, I'm the only woman on the panel. You could have a little bit of manners. Thank you.
Thank you, Breed. Thank you. To bring you to another point, actually, another move that we heard in the Dáil tonight, that recognition of a Palestinian state will happen, according to the Tánaiste. Is that something that you would welcome? Is that a statement you've long been expecting from government?
Well, it got quite an enthusiastic clap. I didn't clap for it. First of all, I need to know, what does it mean? We have a Palestinian ambassador and we work with her. All of the parties, I'm sure, in the Dáil have met her regularly. What does it mean that the government say we recognise the Palestinian state? Look at the state of it. It's in bits at the moment from the war on Gaza and the attacks on the West Bank. What we really need is sanctions, actual sanctions on Israel. Because I was listening to the news tonight, Benjamin Netanyahu consistently says, there is no power on earth can stop me or will stop me. They will do what they like. They will go into a ground offensive in Rafah and they're planning it. And the only thing that will stop them is action. And that's why I asked Simon Harris tonight, Brand, recognise the state of Israel. It's a statement, but will you expel the Israeli ambassador and put sanctions on that are meaningful? And no, they won't, because their own Ardesh voted not to introduce the territorials.
Did he give you an answer?
No, he did not. Okay. Not up to the time I left anyway. Maybe I can't say that he didn't, in my absence, say, yes, I will expel her. But I think it would have been headline news if he had.
We would have heard about it. We'll have to leave that there for now. My thanks to Barry Cowan, to Piers Doherty, Breed Smith, Kevin Doyle, and to Stephen Kinsella, who joined us on Skype. Coming up next, former Ireland international Niall Quinn on the importance of cardiac screening for young athletes. Stay with us. Tipperary family has set up a charity in honour of their son who died unexpectedly during a hurling match. The Dylan Quirk Foundation aims to fund widespread cardiac screening for young people aged between 12 and 18 involved in sport right across the country. I'm joined now by Chair of the Foundation, former Ireland international Niall Quinn. Niall, you're very welcome along to the programme tonight. Mm-hmm. The foundation was launched today by Dylan's family and you're there and you're coming in as chair of this foundation. Mm-hmm. Why is it so important for you to be involved?
Well, first of all, it was the easiest thing ever to be involved when the sort of Quirk family's response to the awful tragic circumstances of Dylan passing, when their response was to make sure that no other parents went through the pain that they did, which was, you know, remarkable of them, it was easy to jump on board and give them a hand out. What resulted was an amazing outpouring of support from throughout the country, internationally even, and not just the GAA world, which was very interesting. So, you know, I come from the world of football and I didn't want to press on them at an early stage that it should be done for football as well as the GAA. But that happened very quickly because of the universal support we got. And, you know, now we saw today, we were in attendance at our launch today. You know, soccer was there, the GPA were there, the PFAI were there, the women's PFAI were there, golf was represented, horse racing was represented, and rugby as well, the rugby players. And so the Athletes Alliance have come together, the elite players, the representatives of them, you know, are pooling together to shout louder as a force. And the first main topic of their quest is to make sure that all of the players in their sport receive cardiac screening.
And in Dylan's case, he was just 24 when he collapsed and died in August of 2022. And his family had said they were unaware that he had a heart condition at the time. Mm-hmm. And how many heart conditions can just go undetected? Like, does that leave people, I suppose, who play, you know, high impact sport and who were seen as being, you know, at the pinnacle of sporting fitness. A huge shock, obviously, for his family. But for anyone in the sporting arena, you think you're invincible.
Yeah, and I think we only get to hear about those people, you know, and you think that the tragedy that happened with Dylan, it happens to certain sports people. But on the general field of play in grassroots, we're losing up to 100 people a year in this country. And that's too much. It's way too much. And SADS is a silent killer, you know, and it can be prevented. And who am I to say that? I only have to point us to Italy, where it's actually the law. If you play a sport that requires intensive training and competition, you must be screened before you can play that. Your organisation, your association, your club, you must screen that young person. And so those numbers in Italy have come crashing down to the point where they have an 89% success rate with this new law. And it's actually, it's been around a long, long time. And it shows that there's the right thing to do, and the right thing to do is to screen as many young people as possible. And that's when, you know, when it all hit home to us that every sport is in danger here, every young person who's taking part, you know, needs to be screened, then it became the obvious thing to aim for as a foundation.
Does cardiac screening happen in some pockets among some teams, but not right across the board?
Yeah, there has been sporadic cardiac screening, and, you know, the company we work with, Advanced Medical Services, they have, you know, they go to schools, they sell it off their own back, they present, they do what they do. They're an excellent group. They've done 300,000 screenings at this point, so they know what they're doing. And what's interesting, though, is that, you know, they're out there telling people about this, trying to make inroads. There are one or two other groups in the past that have done that. Brendan O'Carroll, in fairness, backed the FAI on a project some time ago, pre-pandemic, to do something similar with elite players. But I think the momentum is here for Dylan and his foundation, on the basis that all sports are gathering behind it. And the success already, I mean, it's funny being at a launch today, and already, you know, we've had 1,200 kids screened by the Dylan Quirk Foundation, and there are 10,000 in the booking system before the end of the year. And the amazing thing is, 1.3 million has been raised because of this great support and I suppose willingness to help from the general public. And so you're starting a charity with 1.3 million in the bank, and you can start to do things. It's a great way to be.
So this is going to involve every club right around the country and across different sports as well.
Correct.
That's the hope. Well, it's pretty ambitious.
Yeah, it's ambitious, but there are two aims. So the short-term aim is to get as many young people tested as possible, and we'll do that. Come onto the website, go onto the Dylan Quirk Foundation website, register, and we'll do the rest. And we'll work it into the system, and we'll get you there. We'll do everything we can to get the numbers in, you know, and really sort of drive this home. But there's a second aim of the Dylan Quirk Foundation, and that's to get government to make it mandatory for all sports to screen their young participants. Now, far-fetched, will that happen? It happens in Italy. But hey, do you know, there's another stat or a money stat that I'll point you to. This year, the government kindly have given 183 million euro to sport. Now, wouldn't it be great if, as a prerequisite to drawing down those funds, each sport had to screen their young participants?
Right. So it's the cost of doing it.
Well, the cost, we'll take the cost until that time comes. We're going to make sure that we'll make the inroads till that time comes. But we do call on government. Election coming up, maybe that 183 million might become 200 million in an election year. Who knows? But what's interesting is, can we force a will for each sport who draws down that big money to put a bit to one side to screen all their young players?
It's a brilliant initiative. Now, before I let you go, briefly, what did you make of tonight's game at the Aviva?
I thought they finished brilliantly. I thought they were very apprehensive. You know, at the start, it was England. And, you know, they're playing the best in the world. They're up there mixing it with, you know, with the big hitters. And that shows, and you know, I think it was France the other night as well. I thought first 15, 20 minutes, like, oh my God, we're here in the big league. And it took them a while to get going. But the way they played in the second half would give you great encouragement. Massive crowd, over 30,000 at the match. They're writing new chapters all the time. They're getting closer. Stick at it. No, I think there's some great girls among that team.
All right. Well, a positive note to leave it on, despite that unfortunate 2-0 loss to England. But there we'll have to leave. My thanks to Niall, all of our panellists tonight. Our programme is available as a podcast. You can find us on Instagram. But from all the late team here, good night and do take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.